Now, as a parent yourself, I know you're okay with your children watching The Simpsons, right? But are you okay with your children watching Family Guy?
Welcome to the Medical Dads Podcast, a parenting podcast by two dads who happen to be medical doctors. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dr. Stuart Harmon, a pediatric emergency room physician and father of four from Ottawa, Ontario.
I want to be in the podcast.
Daddy, do you know what you're doing?
Can I play a game on your computer?
Daddy, where's mommy?
And I'm your other co-host, Dr. David Hsu, a family doctor from Toronto, Ontario. Welcome aboard. All right, Stu, we are back for Medical Dads, and this week we are going back to the well of bad dads. We promised that there would be an episode, there would be a whole series on bad dads, and since we've talked about deadbeat dads, today we're going to be talking about evil dads and how they are represented in fiction, TV, movies, books.
Because on the Medical Dads show, we always keep our promises.
Except when it comes to that whole business of see you in a week, apparently.
That's more of an ironic see you in a week.
All right. But before we talk about bad parenting again, why don't you talk to us a little bit about football? Because the Super Bowl just happened. I didn't even realize you were a football fan, but apparently your family sat down and watched the big game.
Big fan of the halftime show and the Super Bowl commercials in this house. Yeah, this is kind of a role reversal. Usually it's Dr. Hsu who's telling us about sports or recounting sports stories. I'm actually a little surprised you don't watch the Super Bowl at your house.
I used to be a huge football fan. I used to be a huge fan back in high school, early university.
Yeah.
But gradually, I lost interest in it. Not coincidentally, when my team, the Dallas Cowboys, slowly started to lose relevance in the standings.
Well, this year we decided to watch the Super Bowl. We've been doing this for about, I don't know, three or four Super Bowls now.
So the whole family, this means you, your son, your three daughters, and your wife are all watching the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's right. Anybody who likes a spread of nachos, pizza, and other junk food gathers around the TV to watch the Super Bowl when we have our Super Bowl Sunday.
Now, does everyone understand football? Because the big complaint I get whenever we get people who aren't real football fans in the room to watch football is, I don't know what just happened. What's going on? Can someone explain the rules? Like, how often is that discussion happening during the game?
Not as much as you think. My kids are pretty much inventing their own rules in their mind as they're watching the game. I mean, I myself don't understand all the rules of football. There's a lot of things in football that can be rather confusing. So there are times where even I'm saying, like, oh, okay, wait, who's that yellow flag on? Who's that for? What did that person actually do? Sometimes you can tell, sometimes you can't.
Right.
But we just enjoy getting out all the snacks and the food and all that kind of stuff. Our complaint is that the commercials, you tune in for the Super Bowl commercials, but the way the broadcasting laws are in Canada, you can't actually see all the American commercials. So you're getting some of the funny commercials, but not all of them. You're getting some funny commercials and then some commercials for your local gold exchange store or some other local thing that you don't care about.
That's still going on. Like, I haven't watched football in many years. You think they would have fixed that problem by now? That problem existed when we were in elementary school, right? You'd hear about like these big Pepsi or Coke commercials, and you wouldn't get a sniff of it here in Canada. You'd have to like turn on Entertainment Tonight the next day when they review all the commercials. Now you get to see it finally.
Yeah, and what we do get is, or at least this year, what you do get, you don't get the same commercials, but you get plenty of snippets of Taylor Swift. If that's right. What you're tuning in for the Super Bowl, it doesn't matter if you're watching it from Canada or the U.S., you get your fill of that.
So this I need to understand, because I still read the sports pages. I kind of know what's going on in the NFL.
Yeah.
But it seems like what's been going on in the NFL the last 2 or 3 months is Taylor Swift. And actually, I don't really get this because I'm too old now. I'm not into pop music. Can you please explain to me what is the fascination with Taylor Swift? Because I've brought this up. My wife's like, she's supposedly an amazing singer. She writes her own songs. So I opened my Spotify account. I got my kids. I'm like, we're going to listen to some Taylor Swift. So we tried listening to this stuff on our drive to work. And I'm like, this person has a fanatical worldwide following, and I just don't get it. All right, I just don't get it. Like, is it because she's really pretty? Does she have an amazing voice? What is it about this person?
I mean, if I knew exactly what it was, then I think we'd have more listeners on our podcast.
Please tell us the secret, Taylor Swift.
But I guess when you think about the history of Taylor Swift, she was this slow burn, right? I mean, when Taylor Swift first came out, I feel like there were a lot of similar acts at the time. I mean, I feel like she was maybe contemporary to the Call Me Maybe singer Carly Rae Jepsen, right? And I don't think she was that far removed from when Britney Spears was a popular singer, or that far removed when Jessica Simpson was a singer. But whereas a lot of those other people rose up, burned brightly, then had scandals, then had their lives fall apart and had personal problems and disappeared, she just sort of just kept trucking along. And then one day, somebody just realized, wow, this person's been popular for a long time and has a huge trove of music now. And then became popular with a new generation. All these young kids started having this interest in Taylor Swift. And then their nostalgic parents also were fans of Taylor Swift.
She's that old? Like, this, I feel like as you're telling this story, that does make sense. I've heard this name bandied about forever, but she's that old that she's already into nostalgia? She has a nostalgia crowd?
Well, I think she started, and I mean, Taylor Swift fans, or Swifties, as they prefer to be referred to as, will maybe crucify me for getting this info wrong, but I understand her as someone who started essentially in her teens or early 20s, and I think she's about 38 years old now. So she's not, I mean, that's young compared to us, but that's not young by the standard of a pop singer for the most part. This is now putting her into territory like someone like, I mean, she's not nearly as old as Madonna, but Madonna is somebody who had a very long-spanning career and was still, like, would come out every once in a while and crank out a few number one hits, right? Yeah, Taylor Swift has just consistently just been showing up and pumping out the songs. So, yeah, I don't know exactly why in the last sort of 2-3 years it seems like she suddenly became popular, but I think there is some element of people heard she was popular. People heard that it was hard to get tickets to her show, which made people want tickets to her show. And I think that helped.
I think it kind of fits our role as dads, you know, hosting a dad podcast.
That's right.
That you and I don't really get what's going on with this. This seems like one of these things that's just beyond dads, really. It's like a daughter thing or a woman thing.
I think you're right. I think if we came out and we were like, oh, yeah, here is an accurate description of the Taylor Swift phenomenon with a complete understanding of what makes her awesome, very quickly our listeners would be like, what? Something's wrong here. these guys aren't really dads. This whole thing is made up.
Well, she can't be all bad for sure, right? Like, she's apparently... The Donald Trump and his election campaign have really targeted her, right?
Really?
They have singled her out as a trouble, potential trouble for the Donalds.
Really?
So there's this whole, they're trying to discredit her because I guess she's on the Democrat side.
Oh.
And so, you know, I don't want to give away my voting allegiance, but consider me a Swiftie if you're going to put me against the Donald.
So from the guy who has no voting rights in the United States of America, I'll point out Dr. Hsu does not get a vote in that election.
If we can sway even one vote with this podcast, then we've done more than anyone could have expected, really.
I mean, if Taylor Swift can do for the Democrats what she's done for the NFL, then Biden is comfortably going to be president for several years after his death, actually. Yeah, that was the theme of the Super Bowl, and to many people, there are more people watching the Super Bowl who are watching it because they're Taylor Swift fans than there are, I guess, people like you who actually like football, since you didn't watch
people
the Super Bowl.
People who actually used to like football aren't even watching the game anymore. I used to find the Super Bowl kind of annoying, actually, even when I was a big fan, because there's too many commercials. The halftime is like super long. And when you're a purist for your sport, you actually don't like it when all these non-fans are watching the game and distracting you, asking you what is a first down, right? Like, that's annoying. So actually, if you're a real football fan, you actually have a better time the week, 2 weeks before during the NFC-AFC championship games, because those teams are still strong, but those games aren't as overhyped.
Well, you might find watching it with your children isn't so difficult now because they flood the screen with all kinds of fancy video game-esque graphics to give kids a sense of who's scoring the most points or what has to be done to level up. You know, it's like my kid was actually asking me, are those lines actually on the field? Can the football players see them? No, honey, that's all added in afterwards. They can't see that.
Now, how do you explain to them the whole concept of football as a physician, right? As an emergency room physician, isn't there a part of you that deep down is just like, this game is ridiculous? You're essentially watching young men getting sent out to acquire brain injuries. Like, how do you justify that to your kids when they ask you about that?
You know, surprisingly, my children didn't think to ask me about the long-term effects of traumatic brain injury.
They're too busy gorging themselves on junk food.
That's right. They're loading up on their third plate of nachos covered in some kind of mysterious plastic cheese sauce. And I'm telling them, oh, kids, the tragedy here is the long-term damage to these players. You know, it doesn't seem like a problem now, but what they're doing years down the road will be a problem. As my kid is having like their third slice of pizza and a bag of pretzels. Yeah, Dad, they're so stupid to not realize that their actions today could affect them later. Could have some more of that salsa.
There you go. That's the state of the National Football League in Ottawa in 2024.
Maybe my parting thought on the whole thing is that the experience of just sitting down with the family and doing something together while eating snacks is such that afterwards, my wife and I were very much, especially since we sent the kids to bed before the game was over. and in fact, the game was tied, right? I don't know if you saw the highlights or anything, but this game in the last two minutes of the game became tied and they were going into overtime. And I'd have been willing to stay up and watch the rest, but my wife had to go to work early the next day and she was falling asleep. So we left this momentous Super Bowl title championship game, chance for the defending champions to make history in terms of being like the first team to be back-to-back Super Bowl champions in so many years. We left it. It's like, well, we'll find out tomorrow who wins. Went to bed.
Now, there's a family that's emotionally invested in the cheese whiz, right? The nachos gave them such a food coma that they fell asleep for the climactic part of one of the greatest games ever played, apparently.
But I did leave feeling like, you know, we should do this every Sunday. But instead of with the Super Bowl, we could be watching Back to the Future. So that's an example of stellar parenting. Let's talk about some dads who are doing something wrong.
Yes, let's get back to this business of bad dads, right? We thought it would be fun if we broke down some of these.
I like that you almost said useful. whoa, hold on for a second. Medical Dad stopped being a useful podcast ages ago. But fun.
It's still useful. If you dig through our archive and want to know how to handle a fever or whether to get your kids vaccinated or not, there are episodes on this. But we're more into fun now, all right? So today we're going to break down some of the archetype fictional bad dad characters. And at the end, we're going to pick our favorite one out of that lot.
Yeah.
Right? And when I say evil dads on screen, I think most of you have already got a few images in your mind. There are a ton of these bad dads, but only a few of them really like stand the test of really being recognized in pop culture, yeah. Right? And we're just going to focus on those guys because otherwise we'd be here for 16 hours.
I mean, you said we're going to break down bad dads. Subconsciously, a lot of people are now making the connection Breaking Bad. But before we jump to the more modern ones, maybe we'll go back a little bit to some of the earlier.
All right. So we'll start with the written word. All right. We'll start with fictional dads. Actually, this isn't even written. This would be from antiquity, all right?
Oral tradition. Yeah, okay. So then I was going to start with Uranus, the Greek god Uranus.
Right. Now, you are our classical guy, as we've established in prior episodes. So why don't you take us through why this guy and his relationship with his son, Zeus, is it?
No, it's Uranus.
His son's Cronus.
Cronus, yeah.
Okay, and then Zeus. Like, why is this a chain reaction of evil parenting?
That's a good way to look at it. There's a lesson to be learned here. So Uranus was one of the original like beings of the universe in Greek mythology. And then his partner was Gaia, who essentially was Earth, right? And you know, things started off well. He was a dad. He had some kids, but then he started to have some kids that were monsters. I think he had some kind of 100-eyed or 100-handed kid who he probably was worried that the kid could overthrow him. So he buried those kids underground. He forced those kids to live underground. So right there, you know, a dad, in these modern times, people struggling to have kids, going through in vitro fertilization, all these type of things, and you're so desperate, you're just happy for a kid at all. You just want a kid, and you think to yourself, well, I'll worry if they're healthy later, but I just want a kid at all. But in those days, it's like, oh, no, look, too many hands. I don't like the look of that. Underground you go. Bury this kid underground.
That's not just a modern-day thing, okay? Just because there are some parents out there who really want kids, there are also dudes out there right now that don't want kids, right? There are a lot of guys like that. There are guys who have a few kids, and they're like, I don't want any more kids. That's a very common scenario.
Well, this guy's crime wasn't just that he didn't want more kids. It's that when he had the kids, because they were misshapen and monstrous, that's when he relegated them to the basement or put them underground. So his wife, and this is a common theme when it comes to bad dads, is that when it comes to dad versus the kids, expect mom to take the kids' sides pretty much 100% of the time. So she actually rallied some of the kids to try to get them to overthrow Uranus. And one of the kids, I think the only one who was willing to actually act out mom's plan, which was to castrate the guy, was Kronos. So that's where Kronos comes in. Kronos was the next generation of Greek gods or titans, so along comes Kronos, and he does this. He castrates his father. I mean, when you think about all the hidden meaning in this, that a mother doesn't like the behavior of her husband, and it's not that she even wants the kids to kill the guy. It's like, I don't mind having him around, but if you could castrate him, then that would make him a much more livable partner.
Right. The high-pitched voice version of the dude is tolerable.
The more mellow version. So then that brings us to our next chronological bad dad in our historical timeline. So Kronos castrates his dad. He becomes the new king of the gods or the king of the titans, right? And he hears a prophecy that he will be overthrown by his children, or he's worried that he's going to be overthrown by his children. So what do you think he does?
Something similar, right? Got to be something similar, like killing them, burying them in the ground, something like that.
He decides
that
he's going to eat them. That's what he does.
Eat them.
Yeah. He has five kids and he eats every one of them. But then...
Actually, I do remember this.
This is kind of familiar. He eats every kid, and then his mom, or the mom, right, his wife, is just too distraught to see all the kids being devoured. And so... for her last kid, she wraps up a rock to make it look like a kid and lets him eat the rock, and then secretly raises the other kid. And now you get to Zeus. Now you're getting to the gods that people are kind of more familiar with, because I think Zeus represents the flip from titans to gods. But yeah, out comes Zeus, and then he attacks his father, cuts open his belly, and releases the other gods that he's devoured. And yet another evil dad is overturned by his children.
Yeah, as you're telling that story, I remember now, because there's a famous book called The Book of Greek Myths by Dallaire.
Yeah.
It's like a children's book. I bought it for my kids when they were smaller, and we read some of it. And there is a page where they draw Kronos, but in the outline of his abdominal muscles, each abdominal muscle is shaped a little bit like a head, because he's eating all these dudes and they're in his stomach. Right? And my daughter and I were looking at it, we're like, is that a face? Is that a face? And then we read the story, like, oh, that is a face. That's pretty nasty. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because a lot of times the Greek myths really slide under the radar when you're parenting, right? Yeah. Like when my kids were small and they stumbled across like Beezus and Ramona or the Wimpy Kid book series, my wife was like, oh, the language in these books is terrible. These are nonsense. Yeah. Then you bust out the Greek myths, and they can sort of, people forget. People just think, oh, the Greek myths, those are those boring stories we talked about back in elementary school. They don't realize there's some really dark, dark, dark matter in this stuff.
And a lot of sexual stuff, too. You can see why kids just devour this stuff when they realize it's out there and their parents don't stop them. Yeah, I had a book in the library of my elementary school that was the Illustrated Guide to Greek Mythology. And it was just great. I'm always trying to find that book, but I think it's out of print. I haven't even been able to find
this is the book.
A picture of what
I think this
like.
Is the book you're talking
was
about.
Was that?
Now, I think it's the book that you're talking about. This is a very, very famous book about Greek mythology.
Well, at any rate, there you go. Like, so many themes in there, right? That the recurring theme of the father who's afraid of being supplanted by his kids, and his efforts to fight back about that and maintain his dominance just lead to his like demise. And I think there's an element of that in real life, right? Like as a dad, you can get to a point where you start to see your kids' talents potentially outshine yours. And if you go the wrong route on that, the moral of the story is that your wife will turn against you and the kids will triumph. So you might as well support your kids and be on their side.
All right. So that's our first written down dad, right? Now,
yeah. I mean, that's oral tradition that eventually somebody starts to record these stories.
Right. Now, due to time constraints, we're just going to fast forward because we don't have time to cover any other literary dads except for the next one, the Incredible Hulk. Right. Yeah. That's also a written and drawn tradition. All right. Very near and dear to Dr. Harmon's heart. Apparently, the Incredible Hulk also had a really, really difficult childhood.
Yeah.
Because his father was a bad guy. And I didn't even know that. I've read some of these comics. I did not know Bruce Banner's father's story. So he's going to have to enlighten us about
this. Yes. So this was added later to the mythology. It was a bit of a retcon, as they say in comic books, right? But
what? Marvel adding things to a mythology? Retconning? Unbelievable.
But it makes sense when you think. So the people who know nothing about the Hulk, or the Incredible Hulk, probably are aware at least of the basic concept that he's a guy and that when he gets angry, he turns into this powerful monster, right? He turns into Incredible Hulk.
That's not different from any other dad out there. That's an essential part of being a man. And honestly, it spans genders, man. Women, when they get angry, they can get pretty angry too.
Yeah, there's a She-Hulk out there. She'll get pretty nasty. But when you think about it, it's like, well, why is this guy, when he gets angry, does he get so powerful? Like, why is his rage monster? I mean, we all get angry, but why is his rage monster so insanely powerful? Like, the Hulk is the strongest character in all the universe, right?
I thought it was because of the gamma rays. Wasn't the whole point of this that he got blasted by gamma rays? This could actually happen to any of us. But no, there's actually a deep-rooted trauma at the heart of
all
this.
That's right. Other characters in the Marvel comics have been hit by gamma rays and have gained different powers. There's a guy whose thing is that he's super smart instead of super strong, for example. But the Hulk's thing is not only is he strong, but the, as they say in the comics, madder he gets, the stronger he gets. So it's not just that he's strong, but if somebody beats him up and he gets angry about it, then he's going to come back even stronger. That's why he always wins in the end, right? But so it's like, why is this guy's well of rage so deep? Turns out that he was abused by his father. In the comics, when he's a little kid, his father realizes, because understand that Bruce Banner, the guy who turns into the Hulk, is already a genius before he becomes the Hulk. He's a genius scientist who invents this bomb in the first place, right? And he knows all about the gamma rays. So he's this prodigy child genius, and his father always thinks the child is some kind of freak. He thinks that there's something wrong with the kid, that it's unnatural. The father himself worked with radiation as a scientist and thinks that maybe that's why his kid is some kind of mutant or something. So he beats up on the kid. The part that people can maybe relate to a little bit more in real life is that before his son comes along, him and his wife have this like kind of like romantic relationship, like his, or at the very least, he's the center of his wife's attention. But when the kid comes along, he's actually jealous of his own son, that now there's somebody who his wife loves in a way that's just deeper than she can love her husband. Like the parent-child love is different than the like parent-parent love. And so this guy can't handle it. He's jealous of his son. So he abuses and beats up on his son, and he beats up on his wife. He actually kills his wife in a like in a domestic violence scenario. Yeah. So this is all the built-up rage that's inside of Bruce Banner when he gets hit by that gamma bomb that kind of gets released when he gets turned into the Hulk for the first time.
Now, when did they retcon this stuff? This sounds really contemporary. I can't believe they would have done this in the 70s.
Well, I'm glad that you feel like this is contemporary because this is from the 1980s that they made this stuff. And to me, 1980s is still contemporary literature.
Me too. I mean, it shows our age. But yeah, that is a pretty that puts the Incredible Hulk story in a whole new light. I didn't realize there was this whole difficult childhood upbringing angle to it.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the Bruce Banner character, before becoming the Hulk, has a confrontation with his father at the graveyard where his mother is buried, and kills his father accidentally, but kills his father, which leaves this unresolved rage that he's going to always have because he didn't get proper resolution.
That he kills his father right before he first gets hit by the gamma bomb the first time?
Maybe a couple of years or something before he gets hit by the gamma bomb, before he becomes the Hulk, which kind of has this thing of, we always think of he's hit by gamma rays and then now there's this rage monster, but this is getting at the idea that, no, his capability to do violent things that he would later regret is in him. You know, the gamma rays didn't create that. That was in him. The gamma rays just gave it a form and gave it more power. Mm.
Wow. Literature, okay. I mean, right? that is pretty dark, man. And who out there thought that we were going to be talking about Marvel Comics and that Marvel Comics are for kids? That is some deep-rooted stuff.
That's right. And it kind of shows you in, I guess, our real-life corollary that a bad dad, in this case, remember, the Hulk's not the bad dad here. His father is the bad dad. A bad dad could eventually create a child who's responsible for a lot of destruction, which as much as I love the Hulk, we know that he's gone on rampages and he's destroyed property and towns. And that's all a direct result of poor upbringing by his father.
That's definitely what the modern day psychologist would say sitting next to Bruce Banner in the chair.
It's
right?
Not your fault.
Telling him, none of this is really your fault.
That's what our kids' psychologists will be saying at some point. It's Dr. Shu's fault, son.
Now, that's the written word, all right? Two of the most important characters in the literary canon we've already covered.
Right.
And they were both right up Dr. Harmon's alley. Now let's move into the moving pictures on screen.
All right?
So we're going to move into movies and some of the really evil dads there.
All right. Well,
the big one,
go ahead.
The big one that everyone always thinks of whenever we say evil dad, it's always the dude walking around with the black cape and the black mask. We've talked about him in various other episodes of this show, but why can't we just talk about him one more time? And that's our buddy Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, also known as instant ratings grab for our podcast, because every time we mention anything related to Star Wars, we see listenership quadruple.
Do we really?
No, if that were true, we'd be mentioning Darth Vader a lot more often.
Darth Vader, Darth Vader, Darth Vader.
That's right. In fact, I can look at the timestamp on our recording when we said the word Darth Vader and point out that is where listenership dropped off again, and it will take us probably a few more months to bring it back.
Well, you have to break down the listenership into specific demographics. With certain demographics, the listenership spikes during the Darth Vader conversation.
Yeah. That's right. You and me tend to listen to those episodes more than once.
Now, Darth Vader's problem being an evil dad is that his problem is actually that, partly we talked about this in the Deadbeat Dads episode. For much of the time, he doesn't know that he's a dad. Mm-hmm. So he's absolved of any responsibility as a parent until he finds out through some back channels, depending on which of the Star Wars canon you listen to or believe in. He finds out at some point between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back that he has a son now,
yeah.
Right? And his son's Luke Skywalker. And he decides, we're going to turn him into one of the bad guys. That becomes his big thing,
yeah.
Right? Which that in of itself doesn't really make him such a bad dad,
yeah.
Right? Because there are lots of dads out there who want their sons to follow in their footsteps, right? The corrupt businessman wants his son to take over the family business,
yeah.
Right? The politician who's happens to be the president of the United States assigns his family members all sorts of cabinet positions, right? They one of them might be able to solve the Middle East crisis, right? Putting your kids into a position of power because you have worked to attain that position of power doesn't inherently make you a bad dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? But what happens is that when it becomes apparent that Luke is actually not a bad guy, he doesn't believe in any of this stuff, right? So Luke turns out he'd rather die than join his dad. That pisses off the bad dad, right? Because he can't stomach the thought that your son is not going to work for your successful company, but instead is going to go work for the rival company on the other side, right? So then he's like, okay, now we're just going to have to fight it out and let the best man win. That's where the logic of Darth Vader starts to break down a little bit.
I don't know if I would necessarily put that frame around it, you know? I think as opposed to the dad who's afraid that his kid will overthrow him and eats his children, Darth Vader is more of less of the evil dad and more just an evil guy who is a dad. But what you're describing with Luke Skywalker could be a lot, could be interpreted as just tough love, right? Like, because when he's fighting Luke Skywalker, his skill level is above Luke Skywalker's skill level. In Empire Strikes Back, he cuts off Luke's hand, but he doesn't kill him. And he probably could have at that point, right? Luke's training was incomplete at that point. If he wanted to, he could have killed Luke Skywalker. But for him, it's, you know, it might seem like a harsh move. You know, the kid's going to hate me. People think I'm evil, but I'm cutting off his hand. But that's the first step to getting a better robotic hand, which at that point in Darth Vader's life, this is what he thinks is the best thing, right? Is to be, you know, I'm half robot myself. This is how you get to, this is how you're going to eventually come into power.
Okay, so you're telling me in Empire Strikes Back, he isn't really trying to kill Luke Skywalker. He's just trying to teach him a lesson. That reframes my whole understanding of that scene. Oh,
absolutely. I mean, when you get to Empire or to
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, thanks. When you get to Return of the Jedi, it's more obvious because he's sort of saying, like, yes, feel that anger. Try to strike me down. And it's not that he's actually trying to get struck down. It's just that he's like, yeah, this is how you build up that Sith power. This is how you become a master of the dark side.
So he's no different than any other, you know, Asian American tiger parent dragging their kid to piano lessons and violin lessons, right? There's going to be pain, but you'll become a better musician at the end of the day is essentially Darth Vader's problem.
Yeah, his fallacy is perhaps in having a poor understanding of what actually is good for your kid, but everything he's done is with good intentions for his kid, which is essentially what most of us are doing.
Now that you mention it that way, I think you're right. There is a scene, like right away when we introduce this concept that the Emperor tells Darth Vader that your son is alive and he must be killed. Darth Vader immediately turns the tables on the Emperor and says, actually, if he could join us, he would become a powerful ally, right? He is not actually interested in killing his son.
Right.
Now that I think about this a little bit more deeply. Right. He's actually trying to play the Emperor and play Luke while trying to maintain his image as being the Iron Fist of the Galaxy, which is a tricky position to be
That's
in.
Right.
So actually, kudos to Darth, but he may not be the most evil dad on this list.
Yeah, can the most evil man on the list still be the best dad on the list? And this is to say nothing of the fact that by the end of the trilogy, he actually does essentially sacrifice his life to save his son, right? Say, to say nothing of that.
Right. Right. All right. So he might have been a really terrible boyfriend and husband.
That's right.
But he actually isn't such a bad dad. He was probably a really bad, you know, politician in terms of his ability to rule planets and things like that. But as a parent, not too bad. That's a good one, man. I did not see that.
I mean, he's really striving for the same thing that I am in life, really. Bad Jedi, bad Sith, bad human being, but good dad.
It's actually kind of remarkable that, and I think you're going to see this theme, so I'm just going to spit it out here right now, is that a lot of these characters, they're bad at their, you know, they're bad people, they do bad things, but their one redeeming quality is that they are still trying to protect their family, right? And look after their children. There are very few characters in these later parts that are, in these later characters we're going to explore, that are actually deliberately going out there trying to eat their children. Like, that's not a thing.
I mean, if you want a Darth Vader-esque movie villain to call a bad dad, you can quickly contrast Darth Vader with Thanos from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is a guy who raises a daughter who he loves purely for the purpose of sacrificing her, because to get what he wants, one of the requirements for one of the Infinity Gems that he needs to get, the Soul Gem, is you have to sacrifice the thing you love the most. Since he doesn't love anything, he gets himself to love a daughter, knowing the whole time that he's going to kill her to get this Infinity Gem. Now that is some messed up, twisted, psychological torture dad stuff right there.
All right, so that is one of the movie dads. Now the other movie dad that's near and dear to my heart is the Godfather, right? The mafia dad, right? And actually, this is actually, when I think of evil dads and movies that focus on dad son, you know, parent son relationships, this is the one that jumps out at me right after Darth Vader, right? And so, in the original Godfather movie, the main character is Don Corleone, who's played by Marlon Brando. He is, at the time we meet him in the story, an aging, old, highly respected, but very dangerous man, yeah. Right? He's very powerful. He's the head of all the New York families, but he's getting a little bit old, and he's trying to figure out what he's going to do with the family business. And he's got a bunch of these sons. None of the ones that seem that they want to be part of the family business seem qualified for it. And he has this one son, Michael, played by Al Pacino, yeah. who wants no part of the family business, yeah. right? He's the Luke Skywalker dude of the story, yeah. right? And the whole movie is about how Michael gradually becomes a bad dad or becomes a bad guy, yeah. right? He starts off as a guy who's like, I don't want anything to do with my family. But because of circumstance, he eventually takes over for his dad. So the first character is the Marlon Brando character, who is the typical, you know, mobster dad, a guy with a really, really, really dark life and job. He kills people. He's not afraid to do really bad things, but it's always done in the service of family. Yeah. Right? He is out there looking out for his family. They always make that excuse in these gangster movies that, hey, I'm just doing it for family, yeah. right? For la familia. And then that makes it okay, right? Yeah, he's not a bad dad in the sense of being an absentee father. He doesn't hit his children. He doesn't abuse his children. He's out there protecting his family from all the evil stuff in the world and has to do it in a way where he gets his hands dirty because, hey, the world is a dirty place. How evil do you think this dad is?
Where I think people might sort of make the analogy to what happens in real life is how he's got that one son who doesn't want to be part of the business and has a life that he's planned. And this dad is actually saying, no, my vision for how things should be is going to supersede yours. And this isn't for the good of you. Unlike Darth Vader, who's doing this stuff because he also thinks it'll be good for Luke Skywalker. I see this as a little bit more of, you know, this is what's going to be good for the siblings and for everybody else in the family. So you got to sacrifice your thing. Mm. I think there's a lot of children or like adult children who would relate to the Michael character and say, you know, yeah, I have to be the responsible one. My parents are trying to make, you know, I can't pursue what I want to do in university because I need to do more of this role of looking after the other people in the family. That makes him a bad dad from a certain point of view. And now we're just having the same debate that anybody would be having about these type of parents who are saying, yes, strictly speaking, what I'm doing isn't best for my one kid, but it's actually balancing what's best for all the kids.
Yeah. So in the actual Godfather movie, the Don's relationship with his son is rather complicated, right? Clearly, you're meeting him at a point where they've already had all these discussions, right? I don't actually think the Don wants Michael to become the head of the family. That's actually not on his agenda. Yeah. He just wants Michael to kind of accept the family business and maybe go to law school and become like a lawyer for the family or something. I don't think he actually wants his son to be evil. The Don does have this underlying thing that he hopes that the family can eventually become a legitimate business.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
There just isn't enough time to get to it. There is a discussion later where he talks to Michael about this after he retires and he kind of just says there just wasn't enough time. There just wasn't enough time. He wanted his son to actually become a senator or a politician or a person really pulling the strings from within.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't do it, right? And then in the later movie, like in 2 and 3, Michael is sort of tortured by this. He keeps trying to bring his family to respectability, but he can never really do it, right? Because they've been in this game for so long. So it's a bit more complicated than that.
Okay, so yeah, the Don here might fall at least on the edge of that category of saying a bad guy, but not specifically a bad dad. Although I seem to recall in one of the movies, I think the first one, Michael's wife gets blown up in a car after the wedding, right?
Michael's Italian wife, who was only 16 years old when they shot that movie, gets blown up in a car, yes.
And who was it who blew up the car?
Oh, the Don's enemies. Okay. The Don's enemies had tracked Michael all the way to Sicily. And then they were intending to kill Michael, but the wife got in the car and drove it over to meet him instead.
Okay.
And that's what happened.
So it isn't even that his father single-handedly pulled him back into the business. The business went out. Like
no. At that point, the reason Michael ends up joining the family is actually the dad gets shot by a rival, you know, family/business person. And then the dad is now on his in bed, in a coma, I believe, recovering slowly. And then at that point, the older brother, Sonny, with the big temper, takes over the family and then gets himself killed. So now there's nobody in charge. Yeah. And Michael has to help the family in this situation. So he sort of feels pulled back in by family duty. But nobody's actually telling him to do it. He chooses this on his own.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, actually, I suppose, if anything, this guy is a good dad because he led by such example that his children decided to follow, right? His son, if this guy had been a bad dad, Michael would have been, screw this family, I'm out of here. But his dad instilled these family values into him. So he brought himself back in.
Well, he's a good example of a good teacher, right? He was able to teach the lessons he wanted passed down eventually, even though it almost cost him his own life, right? Yeah, doesn't make him a great guy, but he's a good mentor figure.
All right. So that's Don Corleone. Who else do we have on our more modern list of bad dads for consideration?
Okay, let's move away from movies. Once again, at the expense of time, we only have time to touch on a few characters in each setting.
All right, so we'll say nothing of the fact that the dad from Home Alone let his kid be left home alone twice. And the mom seemed to care, but the dad didn't.
I knew you could not go through the episode without naming the dad from Home Alone.
we'll say no more about that and let the audience ponder it a bit at home.
All right. Now there's a character. Now we've been talking mostly about serious stuff, right? Like serious characters from movies. Let's talk about something a little more lighthearted, right? Because there are some of these evil dads that appear on these television sitcoms, right? So these are the comically derelict dads.
Yeah, right? maybe they're evil dads, right? Now we're talking about comically bad dads as opposed to comically evil.
Yeah, they're just really bad. Yeah. Right. So they're not hitting their kids. They aren't killing people as part of their main job, right? Their main issue is they just don't care about parenting that much, right? They're more interested in sitting in front of the TV or going to the bar.
Going to Moe's.
At night, right? Yeah, so the two obvious ones that jump out at us are Al Bundy and Homer Simpson. Yeah. So I know Married with Children is near and dear to your heart. So why don't you tell us why Al Bundy deserves consideration as being one of the worst dads out there?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I might be defending Al Bundy to some degree. But yeah, he certainly doesn't provide a good role model for his children. I'm trying to think of examples of him actually doing something bad to his children, but he really seems to like love his children. He just is terrible at providing for them.
I will say that he's present. He's always home, right? He always comes home at the end of the day. He's sitting on the couch. That's not that bad.
Well, he's not always home. Sometimes he's off at the nudie bar. Remember, that was part of his thing. But he certainly is a terrible husband, without a doubt. And he's, like, from a hygiene point of view, he's pretty bad. But I've talked on the show before about one of my favorite episodes, which is one of their anniversary episodes, or like a milestone episode in the show, which is where they bring the car to the car wash, but then the car gets lost. And the whole episode, Al is freaking out about like losing his car. And everybody can't even understand why he cares, because the car is a piece of junk anyway. It probably costs less to buy a new car than it would be to salvage the old one.
Right.
But he's saying like, but he's got something precious in the car. And the car, finally they find the car. They realize that it went through the car wash and it was so dirty that it came out a different color. So they just didn't recognize the car when it came out. You know, he's saying, yeah, it's not about the car. It's about what's in the car. And then they're saying, is it an issue of Biggins magazine, Al? And he's going back to the trunk of the car. He's like, no, it's not an issue of Biggins. Then he opens up the trunk and he pulls out an issue of Biggins, which is like the nudie magazine that he's into. But then you see him flip to the middle of the magazine and he has preserved between the pages a picture of the family from the very first season of the show when everybody was still young. And that's what's near and dear to him. So I think I've told that whole story on the show before, but we're telling again in the context of in defense of Al Bundy as a father. He's just terrible at being a father, I suppose, is the thing. Mm. But yeah, he's present. He's there. He sort of tries. He's just really bad at it. In contrast to somebody else who you might put on this sort of same list, if you're talking Homer Simpson, Al Bundy, the other person you might put on that list is Peter Griffin. Peter Griffin, I think, actually, you could make a good argument for him being an evil dad. Peter Griffin is the dad from the show Family Guy. Do you ever see that show?
I have seen snippets of it, but I'm not an adult cartoon person. So I actually haven't watched much Simpsons. So you're on your own here for these two characters.
Oh, gosh. You don't have much insight into even the character of Homer Simpson?
Not a lot, actually.
Homer Simpson's issue is that he is extremely dumb. And he is extremely, I suppose, weak in the sense of giving in to every avarice, right? When you think of your seven deadly sins, there's not a single one of those that he's particularly good at resisting. So he's a glutton. I suppose lust is the thing that he's pretty good at resisting. From the point of view, he's very faithful to his wife and always has been.
Right.
But he's he eats too much. He's prone to being lazy. And so all this affects his parenting. Plus he has a poor sense of what's safe and not safe for children to do. And he does strangle his son. Although there was a recent episode where somebody said, "Aren't you going to strangle the boy?" And he said, no. We don't do that on here anymore. Acknowledging that as times have changed, you just can't get away with that even in a cartoon. But there are many, many, many examples of Homer loving his children and trying to be a better dad. Like, that's a common theme on the show. Whereas this show Family Guy, the whole thing about that show is they want to be edgier than The Simpsons. Like, their whole thing is they're an adult cartoon that's in many ways a ripoff of The Simpsons, but their jokes are cruder, right? and there's nowhere they won't go for satire or to take it to the edge, right? And so that show has a dad who ridicules his children, does not show any sign of love to particularly his daughter. Makes fun of her, undermines her, compares her to garbage, as a result, the child has all these psychological problems, which they make light of, for that matter, on the show. They make light of her self harm and cutting. So, I guess if we're talking an analysis of humorous TV dads, Homer Simpson, Al Bundy, bad human beings for sure, but evil dads, probably not evil in their parenting. Peter Griffin, an evil dad.
Sounds like the Peter Griffin character is probably the most evil character we've encountered on this list at this point overall.
I mean, he's not quite up there with, say, Thanos. well, actually, you could make an argument that Thanos treated his daughter way better than Peter Griffin treated his daughter right up until the end. So, yeah, actually, the only person who might be slightly more evil would be these Greek gods who ate their kids. But even then, at least then, it was motivated by a reason. Like, they had a reason to fear their children. Peter Griffin, I think you're right. I think he's the most evil dad on our list.
So far. I mean, okay, this whole Thanos thing, I feel like I should mention this because this sounds a little bit like a biblical story. Right, there's this whole story in the Bible of Abraham who really loves his son Isaac. It's like his most prized possession, because he wasn't able to have children forever. And then eventually, as quite an old man, he has Isaac. But God asks him to sacrifice his son and burn him at the stake, right? And because he's more loyal to God than he is than anything in the world, he agrees to do it. He even builds the thing and then is going to burn his son and show God that he's serious about this, and then God lets him lets the son live. But this sounds very, very similar to that. I don't think that just because Thanos was bound to do this thing that this makes him a bad parent necessarily, because you even said so yourself, he loves his daughter.
Well, I guess I didn't mention that there's two daughters that he raises, one of them Gamora and then the other one Nebula. Gamora is the one who he loves and throws off the cliff. The other daughter he raises, Nebula, he constantly tortures her. He rips off parts of her body and replaces them with machinery. And he doesn't seem to do that towards
anybody. So there's another parent. There's another relationship there that's more troublesome.
That's right. In fact, the parent who shows blatant favoritism to one of their children, that is also a potential form of bad or even evil parenting that we didn't really touch on very much here. That might be a whole episode, another one. Favoritism.
Now, as a parent yourself, are you okay with your children... I know you're okay with your children watching The Simpsons, right? But are you okay with your children watching Family
Actually,
Guy?
No. No, my children don't watch Family Guy as of yet. Yeah. just
interesting.
Too much. Like I have this sort of thing of, you know, watch these shows with your children, and then when things come up, you can use it as a point of discussion. But I don't think I've got the time or the capacity to discuss all the things that would have to be discussed after watching an episode of Family Guy. One of the characters on that show masturbates a lot.
They need to go through high school first before, and then they'll know everything about understanding that show.
That's right. I think that show will be more fun for them to watch when they know they're not supposed to be watching it, and they're watching it without me.
All right. Now there's a couple more characters we got to run through before we finish the longest episode in the history of the Medical Dads. Last category. We've talked about movies. We've talked about sitcoms. We've talked a bit about literature. Now, there's a bunch of evil dads in prestige television, right? And these are these TV dramas on HBO that became the thing on TV over the last 15, 20 years. Yeah. A lot of these shows, oddly enough, the most popular ones all seem to center around some weird evil dad character, yeah. Right? I guess this is a theme, right? Because we have Tony Soprano. We have Walter White. We have Don Draper. We have all these really, really flawed dudes as the leading men of these series, right? Why don't we start with the first one, Tony Soprano?
Okay.
One of my personal favorite fictional characters.
Just don't tell me what happens in the last episode, because I actually haven't seen the entire series yet.
Nobody really knows what happened at the end of the last episode, so there isn't much for me to say. But basically, Tony Soprano, not unlike Michael Corleone and Don Corleone, he's the head of a mob family, right? And then he's also the head of his own little household. But the funny thing about this show is it spends a lot of time dealing with the intricacies of his life as a dad, right? Like, what happens when your daughter figures out that you're actually in the mafia, right? Or what happens when you got to take your daughter to visit a college for her, prospective college admissions, and you happen to run into a former associate of yours who's now in the witness protection program living in a small college town.
That's right. That episode, right. I know that episode, not so much from seeing it, but we talked about it on the show before. And that's a good one.
I mean, all sorts of hijinks happen, right? What happens to you when your mother starts to get old and senile and you're a gangster, right? And you suspect that your mom is actually, maybe because she's lost her mind, or maybe not, maybe she's just kind of jealous of losing authority, but asks to have you wiped out, right? Like, what do you do as a dad in that situation when your mom is out to get you?
You know, I think Tony Soprano, we can kind of quickly sum him up as, you know, a man who did not have a good upbringing in terms of role models for how to be a great dad and to be a great parent,
right?
Who does love his children and struggles with trying to do what's best for his children, in the context of he's a person in a position to spoil his children, as many, you know, even middle class people discover, this is a challenge of you love your kids, but the right thing to do with your kids is not always the easy thing, and sometimes giving in to the easy thing and spoiling them actually is not what's good for the kids. So Tony Soprano struggles with all of that, combined with just what do you do as a human being when there are these times when you give in to your selfish desires, knowing that sometimes what you're doing isn't best for your family or isn't best for your kids. But then, you know, as a human, you still have regret for it, and then you want to make up for it, but then you're stuck in that cycle. So he's a flawed human, very flawed human, and one could make an argument that he's an evil guy on a moralistic level. And as a dad, he's probably more of just a terrible dad than he is a evil in his parenting.
There's a great scene that I've always loved where he owns a boat, because of course he's got all this disposable tax-free income, right?
Yeah.
So he's driving a boat, and then he gets his son AJ onto the boat, and then the two of them just kind of sail off into the sunset, and he's teaching his son how to steer the boat. And that's just like, that's just a regular American dad, right? Like, teach your kid how to drive, show him what nice stuff you can get if you work hard in life. I mean, everyone can relate to it. That character is actually one of my most favorite, conflicted, well-drawn-out characters. Kudos to James Gandolfini, rest in peace, one of my favorite actors. That was a great show, great character.
I got to get around to rewatching that, to watching all of that. Okay, right, so Walter White. Let's talk briefly on him, since we did allude to him earlier in the episode. I think you can summarize him fairly quickly as being a guy who was a great dad, who actually sacrificed a lot in terms of what he could have been in his career for family.
Right.
But then reached a midlife crisis stage of becoming a little bit more, what about me? And Right. And didn't realize
when he gets
it.
Diagnosed with cancer, yeah. Right? He gets diagnosed with cancer, realizes he has only a limited time to live, and he's like, screw it. This is not the life I want.
Yeah. And actually, even in realizing he has cancer, he starts off as being, I've only got a limited time to leave something behind for my family. But mm-hmm. then his biggest failing, I suppose, in that is that he doesn't recognize inwardly the tipping point when it became no longer about his family and just about his own ego. That's kind of what happened with Walter White. But as far as his parenting goes, even as he has this descent, it's a bit hard to put your finger on where he's having examples of being a really bad parent, other than just the fact that when you get involved with the underworld of drugs, you're putting your family at risk, and that's not good parenting.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it seems like these two dudes have in common that they're actually okay at parenting, in the sense, you know, they care about their children. They're not doing anything outwardly malicious to them. Yeah. They're actually looking out for them in the twisted way. Right. But if anything, the fact that they are still dads and trying to be dads in spite of all this other side gig nonsense they have going on, that often is the redeeming thing for all these characters, right? They can be horrible at everything else, but as long as you're a family person, it's still okay. Oddly enough, it's the family guy who's the dude who's present all the time, but is the bad parent who might be the worst of the lot.
That's right. I mean, if we're talking prestige television, I know you haven't seen Game of Thrones, but there are many examples there of parent characters who are evil in the sense of they murder their children. So I suppose... Peter Griffin might not quite be at that level, but that's it in a nutshell. That's a quick list of fictional evil dads, or at least fictional evil people who are dads.
All right. So out of all this discussion, I mean, I know we had this discussion for fun, but it seems like there's two main themes that have come out of this. One is that in most of these modern versions, there really isn't anyone who's really a bad dad that becomes the star of a show or an important character. The truly bad dads, the dads who pretend that they don't have children when they actually do, or is busy abusing their children physically, sexually, or mentally, these characters actually don't really exist on TV. I don't think anyone wants to see those people, even in a fictional form, right? Yeah. So these characters that we have construed in our head as being, oh, that's a bad parent, actually, when you look really closely, they're not really a bad parent most of the time.
I think you're quite right about what people do and don't want to see on television. My dad, mm-hmm. my own dad, who was a policeman, is not actually a big fan of this sort of trend of taking villains and making the show about the villains and portraying them as if they're actually the heroes, you know, because there's a lot of that. There's a wave of that on especially on this premium television. But truly, people generally do like this, right? This is a popular trend of take a villain and make them sort of sympathetic or make them the main character.
Right.
But
it's the anti-hero.
Yeah, the anti-hero. But people's appetite to see anti-hero parents being villainous in their parenting, it just tells you what where the fundamental line to cross in most human beings is. Right? It is at the end of the day, I can tolerate Tony Soprano killing somebody in the witness protection program, but I cannot abide by him beating his children.
Right? Exactly. And then, so that's one theme that we've unearthed here. The other theme is that it's not a theme. It's just who is the worst dad of all? It seems like it's going to come down to a coin flip between Kronos, right, who is eating his children, and the Family Guy dad. And I don't think these two dads have ever been compared head to head in any form of media before, right? So Dr. Harmon, as our resident expert on the Family Guy and on Greek mythology, who is the most evil dad in all of fiction as of February 2024? Who is it?
I think I might have to give it to the Family Guy. From the point of view, his mistreatment of his children seems to be without any fathomable motive.
All right. That, you know what? I've never watched that show, but now that you've named him like the top dude, the top dog, I'm going to have to watch an episode just to see what this is all about.
I'll have to curate a few of the episodes of Peter's worst behavior.
All right. We will revisit this discussion at some point after I've seen some of this worst behavior and see if he lives up to the title of most evil dad in the history of the fictional universe.
Well, until next week, just remember that just trying, right? Like, even if you're bad at it, just trying, just actually loving your kids and trying to do what represents loving your kids will probably keep you off the top of our list of most evil dads of all time.
Right. And then if you just want to be on the list but still be redeemed, no matter how bad your behavior is at work, no matter how many bodies you've buried as part of your regular day job or your side gig, as long as you're doing it for the sake of your family, it's still sort of defensible.
As long as at the end you throw the emperor down a reactor shaft, you have a chance to be redeemed.
All right. Have a good week, everybody.
See you in a week, folks.